broadcasting around the world on International Shortwave Online and the Radio Disclosure Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Aaron, and tonight we're going to go on a fact-finding mission. We're going to try to find some truth here. One fact that I can start with that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt. September 11th, 2001. Our country, the United States, our way of life, our grounds, our cities, the Constitution, everything we stand for was under attack. Be it by terrorist, internal, whatever. I don't even want to get into that tonight. Tonight is a fact-finding mission. All the conspiracy. Well, what did George W. Bush have to say about that?
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
There you go. I'm going to honor that tonight. Totally, completely, 100%. We're going to go on a fact-finding mission. We're not going to tolerate any conspiracy theories. And I got the guy for it tonight. Richard Gage, AIA member of the American Institute of Architects and founder of Architects and Engineers for the 9/11 Truth. This is the guy. He's going to guide us tonight. We're going to sit back and we're going to learn some things because we don't know everything. I don't even know where to start on this. Richard, welcome to the show. And I want to know, where do you want to start on this? Because this is such a complex. You've got the Pentagon. You've got the Twin Towers. You've got Building 7. You have so many things that I'm sure you could talk about. But where's a good place to start?
Well, I always start with the architects and the engineers at the conferences we attend to around the country, hundreds of them by this point. We start with Building 7. Now, most of these architects and engineers know nothing about the third worst structural failure in modern history. This is the 47-story skyscraper that also collapsed on 9/11. So this is an extraordinary story because after witnesses hear explosions, we have this building dropping like a rock straight down uniformly, symmetrically into its own footprint in under 7 seconds. I mean, as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky. And this is at 5:20 in the afternoon, 7 hours after the towers have already collapsed.
There were
a few small scattered fires, but that's what they blame it on.
Where was Building 7 in relation to the Twin Towers? How far away was Building 7? Where was it located? Most people, like myself, don't know anything about Building 7. For some people, this is the first time they've heard anything about this building.
Yeah, it's shocking because, no other skyscraper has collapsed due to normal office fires. And no plane hit this building. This is about a football field in length away from the North Tower. So a few of the beams that flew out of the North Tower, rapidly, 80 miles an hour, laterally, 4-ton and 8-ton structural steel sections blew out, landing 600 feet in every direction. Well, a lot of them landed on World Trade Center 7, but NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked with explaining these three collapses to the American people, said that this was insignificant in the cause of the collapse of this building. They said this building came down due to normal office fires. And I mean, we've had up to 100 skyscrapers around the world that have been had much hotter, larger, and longer lasting fires than the one in this building. There's a few small ones in this building, as a matter of fact. But they've never brought down a skyscraper ever. Most of them are fireproof steel frame skyscrapers. they just don't come down. There's a lot of reasons why. It's a very safe building material and method to use. So this is, and this is after the witnesses hear explosions. So there, it should have been like the first hypothesis that NIST examined in their effort of their fact checking and fact finding mission to find the truth here. But they labored and fumbled this football for 7 years before they came out with their final report and their elaborate collapse initiation theory for this building. And, so and what did they find?
Go ahead.
They found that the building, that the fires were on this particular floor 12 and 13 also, and that they caused these beams, long span, 50-foot long beams, to expand due to thermal expansion, pushing this girder off of its seat on this column 79, allowing floor 13 to fall on 12, 12 on 10, and so on for 9 floors in this progressive sequential failure. And then the inside of this building collapses from the all the way up to the roof of this building on the east side. And then this instability travels laterally across this football field long building from east to west in about 5 or 6 seconds. And then the whole building just drops like a rock, the exterior of the building. And so none of that could be true for a whole variety of reasons that we can talk about here. It's a complete fraud on the part of NIST. And that's why we submitted a second request for correction in our 14-year history here with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, demanding really NIST to prove how indeed this building could have suffered a sequential collapse when all the evidence, including the evidence from the University of Alaska's at Fairbanks, they did a 4-year finite element analysis saying that the building could only have come down like we see in the videos if all the columns in the building were taken out virtually all at once within a second of each other.
All right. I'm going to stop you for a second here. I'm an engineer myself, and gravity is a very powerful thing. Gravity pulls things to the ground. Gravity causes water to move in certain sections, causes ground, you know, other things to move with it, causing all kinds of different things. Okay. What is interesting to me from this building 7 that most people probably have never heard of that are just now getting informed of this. I was looking at the location online of where building 7 was located. It's interesting to see the location of it in the supposed falling debris, but how many beams in an average building? You're an architect. You can answer this. How many beams in an average building when the building is going to fall can fail, but causing it to fall, and here's the key point that I think you said, it fell like a bowling ball. I mean, if you have a house of cards in your house, you're going to still have resistance on those cards as they come down because of the cards underneath it. Same thing with the little square blocks of wood. Like if you're building the little square blocks of wood and you're working it out, there's still resistance. If you were to take a regular piece of wood and drop it, you know, from 5 feet, it's going to drop faster from that 5 feet on down. But when you say it dropped like a bowling ball, I don't want people to miss this because this is the interesting fact. And, you know, we could go on all the crazy conspiracy theories if they wired it or whatever, but how is that possible? How can that happen in a building if it was not wired? That's the question that everybody is posing. That's the question that you're trying to figure out at this point, I take it. How is that possible?
Yeah, this is a key question. And how is it possible at free fall acceleration, which means that no resistance from any one of those columns in this 40,000-ton structural steel moment-resisting frame building. Not one of those columns gave any resistance to this collapse, because if they did give resistance, then that would slow down the acceleration. But this building is accelerating. For a third of its 7-second collapse, it's accelerating straight down through these 40,000 tons of structural steel frame, which is 3 to 5 times stronger than it ever needed to be to hold this building up for its lifetime. So exactly, how is that possible? NIST does not address that question. They were finally forced to admit that it did come down at freefall after first having denied it for years and years, and then in a public conference, in their draft conference on this subject before the final report came out, they were forced to admit it because they were confronted by members of AE 9/11 Truth into admitting it. But then in their final report, they simply suggested that this was consistent with their earlier results, which it was completely not. You know, where did the columns go? Well, in a controlled demolition, where they go is that they're kicked to the side by shaped cutter charges, which cut them first and then kick them to the side. That's what has to happen in order for a building to fall suddenly and symmetrically, because they all have to go at once, otherwise the building begins to fall over. In that free fall, the knees have to be kicked out from underneath a person for him to fall that fast. And there's 80 columns in this building, and all of them had to have been taken out virtually at once, according to Professor Leroy Halsey, and any seventh grader who's done any kind of physics at that level understands that you can't fall through all of that resistance. Even if one column gave resistance, one out of 80, as it buckled, it would slow the building down at least just a little bit for one column, and a whole lot for 80 columns. The columns don't bend like straws in a soda cup. They always provide a minimum of about 25% of their strength, even when they're bent halfway across, bent almost in two.
What is crazy to me about this, and when we come back from this break, Richard, we're gonna keep coming back to this point of free fall, is the amount of, and this is the question that I want to ask coming back from the break to you, the amount of engineering required to bring a building like this to the ground. When the video of, I think it was the guy that said that we need to pull it, which is a demolition term, the amount of pre-engineering required to do this, you couldn't do it while the building was on fire. So I want to address that when we come back. I want to ask that question, because that's always been a question, like how much pre-planning it would have to be. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron, and folks, Richard Gage is my guest, and we're talking about Building 7. The thing about this is, as we continue down this road of investigation and truth finding, we could probably spend all night on Building 7 because of the mystery surrounding how this building actually came to the ground at freefall. And the question that I posed before the break to Richard was, is how much engineering and planning? I mean, you hear what you were describing, which was the whole thing of like, you know, each one of these columns, each one of these beams to accomplish this on with the technology we have today, how much pre-planning to bring a building to the ground is actually required to do this?
Well, it takes a team of dozens of people, months to, many months to engineer, but then several months to place these explosives on the columns and beams also. So this is not done in an afternoon, for instance, especially while the building is on fire, because we've heard that, you know, oh, the fireman brought it down because it was going to tip over and it had structural damage. No, these are done months in advance. It's a huge project.
Have you seen the YouTube? Have you seen, and I hate to interrupt you, have you seen the YouTube video that was online prior to the building collapse and the guy walking through Building 7 where he's riding up the escalator and there's a fireman in there that says, this building's about ready to come down, you need to get out. And he's just walking around nonchalantly. And this video is amazing because you can see certain windows are blown out, but the lobby doesn't really look damaged at all. And the fire alarm's going off. I mean, I can remember the fire alarm audio. Like, have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's extraordinary. There's some smoke in there. I mean, it got some damage from the towers, but the fires were up on the higher floors, 12 and 13 and on up. So the firemen, you asked about Larry Silverstein, because that's an extraordinary statement, because he's talking about the firefighters. They were actually told not to fight these fires in this building. They were told that it had structural damage, and like you just said, that the building was going to come down. Well, guess what? No other high-rise in history has collapsed due to fires, especially the small scattered fires that are in this building. And the worst fires that we have photographs or videos of show, you know, very small and scattered fires. So that it's just inconceivable that they would have allowed this building or been telling people that this building was going to come down due to those fires and stop fighting the fires. There might have been other reasons to stop fighting the fires, but here's Larry Silverstein a year later interviewed on PBS. America Rebuilds is the name of the show. And he says, well, I was talking to the fire commander and there's been such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And so they gave the order to pull, and we watched the building come down. Now, what does that sound like to you? I mean, that's almost a direct quote.
Now, for the listeners out there, you got to understand the term pull it. Explain that term, what it actually means. You're an architect, and you know what I'm talking about here. Explain that.
It's a term that's used in the controlled demolition industry to pull a building. That's just what they say. That's when you place shaped cutter charges throughout the columns and beams in the building, and then with governmental approval, you then you blow those connections, and the building drops a free fall symmetrically into its own footprint, usually, if that's what they want to accomplish, and that's exactly what they accomplished. In the case of Building 7, the center of this building is in the center of the pile, footprint of the building. So that's what it means. Now, Larry Silverstein was asked about this several thousand times, and he came out with his story. I meant pull the firemen out of the building, is what he said he meant. Well, wait a minute. The firemen were told not to fight the fire. They weren't in there fighting fires. And so you don't say pull it when you're talking about firemen. That's not a term used in that industry at all. And specifically for multiple firefighters, which is what he was talking about. So it seems to be a tacit admission on his part that there was a decision to bring the building down. Well, again, that decision is not made in an afternoon. You don't go into a building, particularly when it's on fire, and do months of explosives loading, and not to mention the engineering the months before that. So clearly there is a set of lies, and nowhere are those lies more betrayed than by the official report that came out before NIST got their hands on this. And FEMA did a report, a building performance assessment report in May of 2002. They document a metallurgical examination of the steel in this Appendix C of this report. And they, what do they find? They find hot corrosion attack on the steel with sulfur and molten iron. The FEMA author of this report, Jonathan Barnett, fire protection engineer, says the ends of the steel beams were partly evaporated. Well, guess what? It takes 4,000 degrees to evaporate steel. It takes 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit to melt, begin to melt steel. And yet office fires, normal office fires, are only 500 degrees typically. They can get up when they're very hot, which is not the case in this building, up to about 1,400 degrees, but you're still about 3 to 4 times less temperature than what is documented by FEMA. And where did the hot sulfur corrosion attack come from? NIST threw out this metallurgical examination, by the way, when they took over the investigation in 2002. And they're still asked all these questions. Well, where did this sulfur come from? Well, gosh, there's sulfur in the gypsum board. Wait a minute. Calcium sulfate is not sulfur. Gypsum board has never turned around and attacked the steel that it's been designed to protect for over 100 years. So these are the kind of lies we get from NIST here.
So Linda Moulton Howe, I don't know if you know who she is. She is a friend of Radio Disclosure, and she took dust particles or the dust from the buildings and went and tested it. And according to the independent lab that she had, from what she told us at the time, did find traces of particular chemicals that is used to create thermite. That is something that she swore upon on this, is she went through this with us.
Now, she is referring to a 25-page peer-reviewed paper that was put together by a team of 8 international scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, because they had found in the 7 independently collected samples of this dust these curious red-gray chips that are attracted to a magnet. And they're going, gosh, this is not paint. What is this? We got to figure this out. Well, they do X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy, XEDS, and they find the ingredients of unignited thermite, which is iron oxide and aluminum powders. What's that doing in the World Trade Center? They get real curious, zoom in 50,000 times into the red layer of these dual-layered red-gray chips, indicating that, by the way, that they were fluid applied with this dual layer. And they find what? Nano-sized particles of iron oxide, rhomboidal-shaped crystals, and aluminum platelets that are they're 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. And this is nanotechnology with iron oxide and aluminum powder, the ingredients of thermite. They're set in a bed of oxygen, silica, carbon, organic material that is used for the expansion of TNT to do the concussive force that's required for that. So here we have an incendiary, which works by means of heat, thermite, being engineered to be more explosive. So this is absolutely extraordinary evidence that was documented in this peer-reviewed paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal in 2009, and stands uncontested. Nobody has put forth a peer-reviewed paper to contest these results. You know, they simply wave their hands and say, oh, that's paint. Well, paint doesn't have these exotic properties. Paint doesn't, by the way, when they put it in a heater, what do they find? At 750 degrees Fahrenheit, it ignites and producing all of these iron microspheres, molten iron microspheres. And these are analyzed, and they find that they have the same chemical signature as the molten iron microspheres documented throughout all the World Trade Center dust by both the U.S. Geological Survey and their studies in 2005, which they documented, and then R.J. Lee Group, an environmental consulting firm, which finds these previously molten iron microspheres. Well, where do they come from? There's up to 4 tons of this material in the World Trade Center dust.
Oh, well, my gosh.
We haven't used iron in our skyscrapers. This is elemental iron, you know, for 100 years or so. We use steel alloys, very high-tech stuff now. So, that's what thermite does. It releases molten iron from the iron oxide. And it releases it at 4,000 degrees, which explains the incredible quantity of testimony for molten iron pouring off the ends of the steel beams. Molten iron seen in the videos pouring out of the South Tower minutes prior to its collapse. Molten iron meteorites, they call them. They pull them up. They look like fused molten iron and concrete. They didn't know what else to call it. It looks like a kind of what you'd imagine a meteorite to look like. But all the dust samples have up to 6% of many of them, these molten, previously molten iron microspheres. Well, how would you get those? Well, under explosive conditions, several tons of thermite cutter charges would produce all this molten iron, and it would be aerosolized, basically. What does aerosolized liquid do? It forms itself by surface tension into spheres. So that's why that's the only rational explanation for all of these spheres throughout all of the World Trade Center dust that are so well documented by all these official agencies doing the toxicological studies on the dust.
This is incredible. I mean, this is... it doesn't make any sense. So why... Okay, I promised 100% that I would not start asking those questions, that we're only going to look at facts, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Because as soon as you start going through this, you start to question, you start to feel your heart race, and the amount of sacrifice our country made after 9/11 is just... All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back, and we're going to continue this conversation, and I don't know where we're going to go yet, but I want to talk about the main buildings that everybody knows. And everybody saw the videos that was alive at the time, and everyone's been touched by this. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron, your host tonight. We have Richard Gage, one of the most intelligent architects I think I've ever talked to. And tonight, 9/11, and I'm being a little snarky here. I have to keep my...
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
And no, we're not. We're going to continue that promise tonight as we continue down this fact-finding mission. And just as I promised before the break, we're going to talk about the Twin Towers. This is the big thing. This is, you know, yes, planes hit them, unmarked planes at that. Planes that we have video that have no writings on the side of them. Those are all facts. If you want to go out and research it, you can. There's no visual documentation ever of an airplane actually hitting the Pentagon other than parts out at the Pentagon that makes absolutely no sense. Okay. I'm not going to continue on there because if I do, we'll start in the conspiracy theory stuff, and that's not the goal tonight. The goal tonight is to get the facts, and I want more facts, and Richard has them. So the Twin Towers, where do we start? I mean, this is, there's so many stories. It's heart-wrenching. It's changed our world.
Yeah, well, where I would start is with the cover-up. We're talking about NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who doesn't do building reports, by the way, typically. But they were given this job. Their staff was, and the leadership was completely removed when the Bush administration came in. And in their report, they have their official theory as to how these buildings, the Twin Towers, came down. And what do they tell us? They say that the upper portion of the buildings, in the case of the North Tower, about 15 stories above the point of jet plane impacts, because the steel weakened and bent, and this lightweight steel trusses particularly, and sagged, and then that pulled in the perimeter columns, apparently all the way around the building uniformly, even though the fires are just on one place at a given time in this building, that the upper portion drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. Now, this is completely violates the laws of physics. There's an equal and opposite destructive force when two bodies collide. You take a Mack truck and you run it into a Volkswagen. Which one's going to be destroyed? The lighter. That obeys the laws of physics. So this is the Volkswagen is the upper part of the building. It's the lightest part. The steel columns are almost solid steel at the bottom of the building. And then they get lighter and lighter until they're only 3/8 inch thick or so up at the top of the building. So that can't happen. And the videos show that it didn't happen. What happens in the first 3 seconds, the upper part of the building is from the top down telescoping down on itself. It's flattening. Its structure is being liquefied, if you will, in these explosions that you can clearly see in the videos. And so it is actually gone by the time, just like the Volkswagen hitting the Mack truck. By none of the photos or videos show an upper portion of the building destroying the rest of the building below. What we see after that is what is described by 156 first responders in the oral histories. We have their transcripts. They're talking about explosions going off in the building, seeing them before actually there's any collapse at all. And this is again and again and again, very specific order of events. Some of them describe like a train running underneath my feet, all these explosions, and then the building beginning to come down. They see flashes of light before the building comes down. Four or five of them at least see those flashes that are not as easily seen in the daylight videos. And then what happens after that? We have these additional explosions, some of them say like wrapping all the way around the building like a belt. All these explosions, and indeed the videos show the ejection of 4- and 8-ton structural steel sections weighing 4 to 8 tons, landing 600 feet in every direction and expelled at 80 miles an hour laterally out of the sides of these buildings, freely flying structural steel sections. That's like takes enough energy to hurl a 200-pound cannonball 3 miles. And there's thousands of these steel sections that are delivered all in a 1,400-foot diameter around each of these twin towers, such that all that steel, by the time it's all destroyed, the structural steel skeleton is completely severed, one beam from another column, et cetera, into its individual components, And 98 or 99% of it is outside the footprint of the building, way outside. So it was not available to crush the building. We're talking 90,000 tons of structural steel in each of these buildings, completely unavailable to crush the building. So we say, well, what was crushing the building? Well, maybe it's the concrete floors. Okay, let's look at that. The videos show no stack of pancakes at the bottom, the photos either, of either of these towers. So where did 90,000 tons of concrete go? Well, we look at the videos, and we can see right there. It's being pulverized. Only available method is explosives in midair to a fine powder, 100 microns in size to like a small a piece of ash.
Is that why there was so much dust?
That's what happened to the concrete powder. 30% of that dust is composed of concrete powder, and it's laid like a river. I mean, from river to river across lower Manhattan, 3 inches thick. And so if all of the concrete is outside the footprint up to the 3-square-mile area throughout, then what of the concrete is available to crush the building? It's not there. So we're talking altogether, steel and concrete's 2/3 of the weight of this these buildings.
Yeah.
It's not there. What's crushing the building?
Your guess is as good as mine. You don't want me to get into conspiracy theory.
Well, we go back to the sounds of explosions, the witnesses of explosions, the visual creation of explosions, 20, 40, even 60 stories down below what we're told is a gravitational collapse. We have all of these isolated explosive ejections known as squibs in the controlled demolition industry. And they are, they're pinpoint violent ejections of pulverized building materials. These are not puffs of air, as NIST explains in their very frequently asked questions about the destruction of these two buildings. And these are ejected at 200 feet per second. This is not puffs of air. These are explosive speeds, and they corroborate the witnesses of these first responders, the 156 first responders, who are discussing this incredible destruction, and which happens, by the way, rapidly. The top section of this building does not descend and impact some section of the building below and then stop and rock and creak and groan and then begin to fall off of its seat on this building. No, the top section is destroyed smoothly, suddenly, and guess how fast? At near free fall acceleration yet again. This one is measured by physicist David Chandler at 60% of free fall acceleration.
Jeez.
2/3 is not slowing down when it hits the cold, hard, intact, heavier steel below the point of jet plane impacts. No, it starts suddenly and it accelerates faster. Acceleration means it goes faster and faster with every second until it reaches a maximum velocity down at the base. So it is an extraordinary phenomena that can only be explained by, again, the instant removal of columns just ahead of the destruction. And that is what's causing the destruction, of course, is, and you can see it in we zoom in our documentary on this subject, 9/11 explosive evidence, experts speak out. It's free on YouTube. Google 9/11 experts speak out. And you'll see this one-hour video, and it shows that these are explosions. This is not a collapse at all.
So I'm going to ask a question to you as a broadcast engineer who knows about towers, wind load. We have tons of, we stack steel that is, you know, single base, you know, steel that you're doing much more complex stacking of steel than what we do. But, you know, we're concerned about wind load. We're concerned about the elements. We're concerned about lightning and fire and all of those things. We have fire on towers all the time and the towers don't come down. But here's the question I have. If the steel structure below was designed to handle the weight in these buildings, all the weight from above, if you were to have a collapse of a single two or three floor, would the entire building come to the ground if the weight that has always been there has always been there? You got a plane that's been added, but you know, planes are made of aluminum. They're actually pretty light. They fly in the air. They're not as heavy as you think. I mean, they're heavy. Don't get me wrong, but they're not as heavy as you think. The question I'm asking is, I don't know if this makes sense, but how is that possible that all of that steel underneath would fail that has been supporting that ever since the building was put up?
There is no explanation for the instant removal of steel absent explosive controlled demolition. And it's as simple as that. And we have the video evidence of the explosions, as I've been describing.
Now, you said something a minute ago that you guys have a documentary that you guys put together. How can people find that to after the show here? How can people find that and get to that?
Well, we have a website. It's AE for Architects and Engineers, AE911truth.org. And we have a YouTube channel. And the YouTubes are, you can watch these free on YouTube, the 1 hour version of this documentary. And there's also on our store a number of excellent documentaries, including the 90-minute version of this particular one, which goes into the psychological aspects of trying to share this information with people and what happens inside people's head when they try to grapple with a resulting cognitive dissonance of being confronted with this information.
It's amazing. Richard, we're going to take a quick break, and then after that, we're going to come into the last segment of the show. I am blown away at this point. This guy does an amazing job. He's got a hard job in front of him in trying to get people to understand the truth. I don't know. I don't know how you do it. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron, your host tonight. Topic tonight is 9/11. So many facts tonight that is just heart-wrenching. How it's changed our country, all of it. We're still dealing with it today. Hey, been to the airport lately? I have. No, thank you. I really don't feel safe there. Richard Gage is the guest tonight, and this guy, you've spent probably a lifetime looking at this whole scenario of 9/11, and my hat is off to you. I'm amazed. Foreknowledge that this is going to happen. Do you have any information about people that knew that this was going to happen?
Yeah, this is a fascinating topic, Matt, because we have the BBC announcing the collapse of Building 7 20 minutes before it ever happened. And how do you do that? I mean, yeah, the firemen were saying, oh, the building is going to come down, and even though no high-rise has ever collapsed, steel frame, fireproof high-rise, which is what most all of them are, but due to fire. And so here, the BBC at 5 o'clock in the afternoon announced that it had come down, and they give the reason why. Due to the weakening, they say, when the structural, when the Twin Towers came down. But, and then there's the building right behind Jane Stanley as she's announcing it. In real time, Building 7 is still up. So obviously they were given the script, and they apologized for this grievous error afterwards, citing the confusing events of the day. What does that make them, psychic or something? And how about these construction workers, which are walking away from Building 7 in the afternoon before it collapses, and they hear an explosion over their shoulder. Now they've probably been in the building. They're you know, walking away from it, and they look straight into the CNN camera, and they say, did you hear that? That building's coming down. Flame and debris coming down. The building's coming down. The building's going to blow up, is what they say. And so how do they know that a few small scattered office fires are about to blow up a building?
Okay, you're an engineer. You're an engineer. This is what you do. How would you be able to examine the structure of that building to determine, and how long? That's the second question. Would it take you to examine that building to tell somebody with that much assurance to send it to news, to get the news articles ready, to tell the firemen to get out? How difficult as an engineer, or how many teams of engineers would you need to examine the building? How what would you have to do it, and how long would it take?
You'd have to go into it while it's on fire, A. B, you'd have to remove the gypsum board to see the structure beneath it or above the ceiling, and you can't even see the structure. You can't analyze it. It's full of fireproofing over the steel. And C, it's never happened before, so why would you even assume that the building was going to come down when, in fact, fires have never brought down a skyscraper? So it's ludicrous from beginning to end. And Chief Hayden actually says, well, there was an engineer, and he told us the building's in danger. And I asked him, how long does it have, do you think? And he said, well, in its current condition, you have about 5 hours. Well, that was at noon. That was at 12:30. And sure enough, 5 hours later, the witnesses hear explosions. And the building comes down. What witnesses are we talking about? We're talking about Kevin McTadden. He said, there was like a train running under my feet.
Can I get that guy to come to Vegas? I need someone to tell me where to place my bets.
Oh, yeah, he was good. And they will not release the name of that engineer. He's anonymous. I mean, this whole thing is rigged from beginning to end. And you have witnesses that said, I saw a flash of light, and then the building came down. He's on local news there. Of course, none of these witnesses are in the national news. None of them appear in any of the final reports from NIST on the destruction of these buildings. There are hundreds and hundreds of witnesses of explosions and hundreds of molten metal witnesses. None of them appear in any of the reports put out by NIST or FEMA, even though FEMA did have that metallurgical examination that we referred to. So the foreknowledge of this destruction is really quite incredible, and it leads us to ask ourselves, right, how did they know about these buildings coming down? Who told them? Well, we don't have that information because one finger's pointing at another. And the destruction of evidence is complete almost. 98% of the steel was carted away from the site starting just 2 weeks after 9/11. And all of it put on barges sent to China for recycling before forensic investigators could get their hands on it and do a proper, thorough investigation. And we know what the one piece of steel or two that they did save and include in this metallurgical examination. So they found hot sulfur corrosion attack. The ends of the beams partly evaporated. Liquid molten iron invading the grain boundaries of the steel. I mean, this is direct evidence of thermite destruction and nothing else.
This is, it's so sad because the amount of life that was lost, the tragedy that transpired, the changes in our country. The facts show that something happened that is not explained by the official reports, not explained by, yeah. Richard, you got a hard job, man. You're trying to tell people the truth, and a lot of people don't want to hear the truth when they tell it. How can people support you in your cause?
I would take a look at the website because we've got a lot of evidence there, a lot of information, and you know, we're a nonprofit 501c3 organization. We do projects to get the exposure out, like, and so ae911truth.org is our website, and our current project is to support the justice quest for Matt Campbell, whose brother Jeff died in the North Tower. He was blown to bits in this controlled demolition, and he wants to prove that in a court of law and get the truth out about what killed his brother, really. And so we're raising his legal the funds for his legal fees for a new inquest petition in the UK with one of the top barristers or lawyers, they call them their barristers. In the UK. So I encourage people to look at that opportunity to support getting our evidence into the international court system by also supporting justice for Jeff Campbell. So that's a great project. We also have the request for correction, 100 pages of fraud documented that NIST has put forth on the American people. And of course, if these buildings came down by controlled demolition, we're talking about a huge problem, right? These are inhabited buildings. We're talking about treason and mass murder on the part of a small segment within our government, key, highly placed individuals. Well, who are they? We don't do that research, but you can look. There's a book by Kevin Ryan called Another 19 Suspects, right? And he points out who those are. And you can look at the works of David Ray Griffin on these subjects beyond what the architects and engineers, we don't go past our technical credibility, but there's people who do. Christopher Bolin is another one who's written a book called Solving 9/11. So the answers are out there.
Well, Richard, we thank you for joining us. And folks, I appreciate you guys coming along with our trip with Richard. Richard, my hat is off to you. This is a hard job. And the more facts and the more information that is found about this will only continue to confuse until the guilty parties step forward. Hit me up online, radiodisclosure.com. Also, want to say thank you to WTWW, International Shortwave Station, for running us tonight. If you are on a local station and struggling to hear us, get a shortwave radio. And I love our local stations, don't get me wrong. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Radio Disclosure.